Hi, I'm Greg Knight.
Hey, and I'm Ryan Parker.
And we wanted to take a minute to tell you about our Popping Collar side project, PCTV.
Each month, Greg and I discuss a random show from one of the six major streaming services.
That's right. We cover Netflix, Hulu, Max, Prime Video, Disney Plus, and Apple TV Plus so that you don't have to scroll endlessly to find something to watch.
Think of this show as your personal TV concierge.
Can I interest you in more dragons and beheadings, sir? Or perhaps you'd like to explore the stressed out world of running your own restaurant.
We break down everything from favorite scenes and characters to theology and even the state of the television industry itself.
So look for PCTV each month right here on the Popping Collars feed. Boom. Hi, I'm Greg.
And I'm Betsy.
And this is Going on 30, a Popping Collar side project where we can't stop reliving movies that were nominated or should have been nominated for Best Picture 30 years ago. This month, we're looking at the classic comedy, Groundhog Day.
It's Groundhog Day!
Groundhog time.
1,000 people. Freezing their butts off, waiting to worship a rat.
Weatherman Phil Connors is spending the day in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
Phil? Ned Ryerson, I did the whistling belly button trick at the high school talent show.
Bing!
Bing!
But Phil's about to find out he's not just stuck in Punxsutawney.
Will you be checking out today, Mr. Connors?
Chance of departure today, 100%.
He's stuck.
In Groundhog Day.
I'm reliving the same day over and over.
Phil?
Ned Ryerson?
Bing!
Do you ever have deja vu, Mrs. Lancaster?
I don't think so, but I could check with the kitchen.
Well, it's Groundhog Day. Again?
At first, he was a little anxious.
Phil? What?
Will you be checking out today, Mr. Connors?
I'd say the chance of departure is 80%.
But now,
we could do whatever we want.
He's discovering the possibilities.
Don't you worry about cholesterol?
Why?
And living life like there's
Phil?
No tomorrow.
Phil Connors!
Ned!
Because there isn't.
I am an immortal. I have been stabbed, shot, burned, frozen, electrocuted. I'm a god.
You're a god.
I'm a god. I'm not the god.
He's out of his gourd.
But to get what his heart wants most.
What are you looking for, Phil? A date for the weekend?
Means living this day over again till he gets it right.
Believe it or not, I studied 19th century French poetry.
What a waste of time.
I studied 19th century French poetry.
La fille qui j'aimera.
You speak French?
Oui.
Bill Murray. Andy McDowell.
To the Groundhog.
I always drink to world peace. Well, what should we drink to?
I like to say a prayer and drink to world peace.
Don't drive angry. Don't drive angry.
He might be okay.
Yes! Groundhog Day!
Life has a funny way of repeating itself.
What did you do today?
Oh, same old, same old.
Betsy, I have a brief description of Groundhog Day. Would you like to hear it?
Yes, just one.
A narcissistic TV weatherman, along with his attractive but distant. What? Who wrote this?
What?
Who wrote this nonsense? Listener, I read these for the first time as we're recording. So I'm going to rewrite this. A narcissistic TV weatherman.
Is that shade for Andy McDowell, or is that
no idea?
Or do they really like her? Or are they talking about Chris Elliott? I didn't let
attractive,
you finish
attractive, but
so.
Distant. What
is that about Chris Elliott's character?
Oh no! It has a different adjective. It has a different adjective for Chris Elliott's character.
Oh no!
Okay, I will read it as it says, but
okay.
But let me just say right now, Andy McDowell is a fabulous lady, great.
She's
actress.
Very warm, very warm.
We've already seen her amazing performance in Sex, Lies, and Videotape. Next year, we'll see her again in Four Weddings and a Funeral. She's fantastic. So, anyway, she is not attractive but distant. That is a terrible description of her character. Narcissistic TV weatherman, along with his attractive but distant producer and mawkish cameraman, ridiculous, is sent.
What does that even mean? Are we taking the SAT?
Mawkish. M-A-W-K-I-S-H. Mawkish.
Sentimental in a feeble or sickly way.
All right.
Whoa!
Is sent to report on Groundhog Day.
Did this person audition for this movie and not get it?
I know. Okay. This person has an axe to grind.
Just finish.
Is sent to report on Groundhog Day in the small town of Punxsutawney, where he finds himself repeating the same day over and over.
Thank God.
I'm glad I don't have to repeat that description over and over.
That's terrible.
Betsy, what's your history with the movie Groundhog Day?
I have repeated this movie over and over again, Greg. This is a favorite. This is probably one of the movies I've watched the most, I would say. Maybe even more than Dazed and Confused on this list, I think. It was a fave in the household because it was one that we could watch as a family.
Mm-hmm.
So like my dad grew up in Chicago, you know, caddied with some of the Murray siblings. There's a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And his brother's actually in this movie as the one of the Punxsutawney top hat guys. The bald guy, the guy who chokes on the stage.
Brian Doyle.
Mm-hmm. And so we would watch this movie. You know, my sister and I would quote it to each other and we loved it. It's a funny movie. My sister said that this movie is one of the quintessentially great comedies.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah, this feels like it would have been a date movie for me, but I don't remember taking a date to this movie. Maybe I was not dating at the time that this movie came out. It's definitely one that I'm sure I must have seen in a theater. But it's funny, like, I don't have any specific memories attached to this movie other than, you know, laying on my bed watching cable and catching this movie halfway through and finishing it.
I don't know whether I saw it in the theater. I feel like I might have seen it more rented. Mm-hmm. Or on cable.
Hmm. Yeah, I do remember, like, Bill Murray kind of felt hit or miss for me at this point in his career, you know? Like, what about Bob? I don't know that I would have been super into that. I probably wouldn't have understood it, you know? And this is before he starts doing dramatic stuff, you know? And that's
right
when a lot of people jump.
And I might have, I think at this point, it would have been hard unless it was, like, a compilation show or, like, a compilation VCR tape of old SNL skits to kind of, you know, there's no YouTube yet.
Right.
So you're not seeing some of that work.
Mm-hmm.
You would have known Caddyshack.
Yeah.
You would have known Ghostbusters.
Right.
And so that would have been really the big Bill Murray touchstones.
Yeah. Stripes a little bit, right?
But. Yeah. But even that was, it was kind of an older movie, you know. It was for adults.
Yeah,
I remember when it came out, and I was not. I don't remember being old enough.
Oh, Scrooge! Scrooge would have been
Scrooge.
Like, 89. Yeah,
because so, like even Caddyshack was something that like adults liked, and it wasn't until later, like all the guy bros in my life had seen Caddyshack and then would quote it. Right,
yeah.
Stripes is like 81. So I'm not even 10, right? So that was not necessarily there. I do remember I loved the movie Tootsie. And he was Dustin Hoffman's friend.
Oh,
and roommate or whatever. I do remember that.
Mm-hmm.
He was also in the series Square Pegs on like one episode. But Ghostbusters was really
right
that big. Yeah, he was in the Little Shop of Horrors movie. But yeah, no, it was really, yeah, Scrooged.
Mm-hmm.
We all remember Ghostbusters too. But yeah, I think you're right. What about Bob? Kind of felt a little miss.
Yeah, it's you know, he's getting into this, you know, I'm thinking about these movies, you know, Scrooged and Ghostbusters 2 and all of that stuff. It's like a smart ass who can do high energy, you know, in some places, right? Mm-hmm. But mostly keeps it low key most of the time. And yeah, it's a very different way of doing comedy. And so, so I don't know, all that is to say that I don't know that I would have seen the poster for Groundhog Day and thought, man, I got to go see that, you know? But it's just one of those movies mm-hmm. that, once you understand the concept, like, it's an impossibly great mm-hmm. concept, right? Like, reliving the day over yeah. and over again. And we'll get mm-hmm. into it later. Like, I've written a whole thing about that as a trope and how many things have done that trope, like, moving forward. But, you know, for this to sort of kick off that kind of storytelling, it's just fantastic. It's like a bottle episode of television, you know, when everybody's mm-hmm. trapped in a room and they have to hash something out over a 30-minute sitcom. It's just great. Yeah.
Yeah. And for this to be, you know, Danny Rubin and Harold Ramis and them coming up with that idea,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think it's a great one. You know, and I will acknowledge, you know, that, you know, we should acknowledge that Bill Murray has had some troubles of late. We're on a little semi-canceled area with him.
I don't know.
He had some issues on a film set with a female co-star and mm-hmm. things got kind of shut down on that film. And, you know, he had some issues on this film. we'll get into that
a little bit later. But what are your initial takes on Groundhog Day?
I think in the rewatch, I had forgotten about the hit that never was, the song I'll Be Your Weatherman. I forgot that song just really didn't jump out of this production.
No, I'm and, all right. I'm trying to think of the Caddyshack, like the.
It's too bad. It's too bad that I forgot who sang it. Who sang it? Can you look it up?
Yeah.
Who's saying I'll Be Your Weatherman? It's somebody.
I'll Be
we
Your
should...
Weatherman. It's really a ridiculous title.
It is. I mean, it's every weather cliche comparing to a relationship that you can come up with.
But seasons come and seasons go. I'll make you smile again. If you don't believe me, take me by the hand. Can't you feel your warming up? Yeah, I'm your weatherman.
Delbert McClinton wrote I'll Be Your Weatherman.
Wrote it. Who sang it?
Sang it too, yeah.
Oh, okay. Is that an alias for somebody?
Delbert McClinton. I'm looking at a picture of the guy.
It's not really Buster Poindexter, is it? Okay, I'm just checking. I'm just making sure. Okay.
Weatherman.
So that I had forgotten about that song. A lot of times it's just the little pieces. I've forgotten about some of the characters. The guys in the bowling alley, you know, the drunk guys. I totally have forgotten about those people in favor of the later kind of incarnations. Because you have to kind of, as you map out the progression of how he moves through the repeat,
mm-hmm.
you know, he goes from no consequences, right? That's the first iteration when he figures out that the day is repeating. Oh, I can have no consequences. So I can drink all I want. I can do what I want.
Right.
And have no consequences.
Yeah.
And so then it becomes, you know, I'm going to romance Rita. And then he botches that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then I can't escape this. So I'm just going to try to end it all over and over again. Well, then I'm going to try to save everybody and make every day, you know.
Right.
You know, I'm going to try to keep people alive and the perfect day. And then eventually moves into just kind of the perfect day for the perfect day. I just kind of forgotten the order. And the collection of characters in that town is really what ends up making the whole thing sing for me.
Yeah.
And it's the web that's woven over the course of the movie. The writing is so good and so tight that with that amount of people, that movie could have been forever.
Yes.
It's kind of almost a similar kind of thing to The Fugitive. Like, there's so much going on, but the way the premise keeps things moving,
mm-hmm.
it just keeps it moving.
Yeah.
And it's so good. Yeah. And the way Murray's able to move through that. And, you know, I also realized, you know, I'm just a sucker for people acting with rodents.
Great! Get the word out! Somebody kidnapped Bill! We're going after him!
Why would anybody steal a ground?
I could probably think of a couple of reasons. Herbert.
What is he doing? What can he be thinking?
That's not bad for a quadruped. You gotta check your mirrors. Just side of your eye. Side of your eye.
That's it.
Hey, they're chasing us. Come on, make it fun. Don't drive angry. Don't drive angry.
And when, you know, when he takes Bill the groundhog.
That's right. It's a cute.
And they're in the, he got bit a couple of times, actually had to get rabies shots. I learned in the fun facts on IMDb. Wow. But he, you know, don't drive angry. Don't drive angry. Check your mirrors. Check your mirrors. Like all of that. I'm like, yes, all day. I'm a big fan of any sort of animal work, even though you shouldn't work with animals and kids. Right. But I thought that's quality improv work, and I'll take it from Bill Murray. But
it's really great.
You know, it's a great movie.
You've just outlined, you know, the premise of this movie and all of the stages that Phil goes through. And it's important to note that we have no idea how long Phil is living this day. Like, no. We're only seeing sections of it, you know. We're not seeing like its entirety. So the question, it begs the question, is this mm-hmm. the best Buddhist movie ever made?
Right. Yes.
Yes, is the answer. It's
better than Keanu Reeves in Little Buddha. I would say that is true.
Yeah.
It's potentially less problematic. But I mean, think that idea, right. Yeah. The Dharma, the wheel, that you're trapped on the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, Emily's other comment about the movie is that it's one of the best metaphors about adulting and being an adult.
Yeah.
That there's so much about, you know, being an adult that's getting up and doing the same damn thing.
Right.
Every day, you know, and going, you know, going to the grocery store and cooking the meal and packing the lunch and the thing and then that. And you do life.
Yeah.
And that there's a certain point where you may or may not wake up to the fact that that's the life that you're doing.
Yeah. He has a key line, you know, when he finally attains enlightenment is when he says, like, I don't care about anything. I don't care about today. I don't care about tomorrow. Like, mm-hmm. I just care about like right now. That's what he tells mm-hmm. Rita. Right. And mm-hmm. It's this total like clearing. Right. It's clearing mm-hmm. like all of that suffering, all of that cycle mm-hmm. that he's trapped in out of the way and just focusing on like where he is in the moment and just being there, being present, like fully present mm-hmm. there. And it's great. Right. Like that's what we're talking about. Like that's what's going to release you. Right. Is this idea of,
mm-hmm.
but you know, for so many of us, for so many human minds, we just can't, you know, without sort of practice, we just, it's difficult, you know, it takes mm-hmm. lifetimes to figure it out.
Yes. Yeah. Just to get that good at the piano. Good Lord.
Yeah.
How many days?
You sure this is your first lesson? Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that if I were ever to teach a religion class, I need to outline, like, what is Buddhism? This is, like, this is the movie that I would show, you know, to sort of let folks, you know. Because I think it's easy to sort of, and I think the first time I watched it, I was thinking, oh, it's a romantic comedy. So what he needs is for her to fall in love with him. Mm-hmm. But no, that's not even the point, right? The point is that he appreciates all of it, right? So it's not even about her falling in love, because she falls in love with him earlier in the movie, kind of, right?
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
But that's not what
he gets all weird and stalkery, yeah.
Right, yeah. So that's not what releases him. What releases him is you know, just letting go of all of the stuff that he keeps, you know, sort of carrying with him. To that end, though, my scorching hot take.
Oh,
scorching.
This is these takes have been, I don't know, they've been lukewarm for me, Greg. I mean, is this really going to be scorching hot?
I think once Phil is out of Groundhog Day, I give him about a week before he's back to his old self again.
I don't like these hot takes. You're kind of a bummer.
I mean, could you imagine if you've been living the same day and now all of a sudden stuff is new for you again? You would be like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna go do whatever I want, you know. So let's talk about the Ramis Murray feud that came out of this movie. So famously, so this is a Harold Ramis directed movie. Harold Ramis, sneaky good director, by the way.
I didn't know he was that sneaky.
Really?
Oh, he was a good director.
I mean, I just think that you wouldn't, like, when I think of Harold Ramis, I think actor first, like comedian actor first. I don't necessarily think of him as a director, really.
Also a great writer.
Great writer. Yeah. All of your favorite 80s comedies were written by this guy.
As well as, like, you know, Analyze This and, you know. Bedazzled, one of your favorites. Brendan Fraser.
I do love Bedazzled, actually.
It's a good one.
Again, like Harold Ramis, practicing Buddhist. So, like, all of this is sort of in, you know, this sort of introspection is part of what he's doing here, right? What was the Michael Keaton movie where he starts to, where he, like, clones himself over and over again? I think that's a Harold Ramis movie.
When you say did, are you saying, like, right?
No, I think he directed Multiplicity. Yes, yeah. He did. That was an Andy McDowell movie, too. But, yeah, this idea of, like, who are you, like, you know, working on yourself. They analyze this, analyze that.
Maybe, yes.
You know, all of that stuff. Like, it's very much, you know, he strikes me as a guy who's very self-reflective, kind of, in the projects that he takes on and stuff. And he had I think from all accounts, a good relationship with Bill Murray, but for whatever reason, it sounds like from the reporting that came out from this movie that Bill Murray just was not in a good headspace, just kind of came in a little grouchy onto the set of this movie. And as a result, like, their friendship became fractured for, you know, most of the last 20 years, you know, right up until Harold Ramis died, which was like the mid 2010s, I think.
Yeah, 2014.
Yeah. So, you know, it's one of those sort of famous Hollywood feuds, the Ramis Murray feud. And it seems like it starts in a very small way, but then it just kind of takes on a life of its own, you know?
Yeah, it sounds like they were just really, it just got really testy with one another on the set.
It's kind of how these feuds sort of start. Like, they, you know, it's like these small seeds, but then they, like, grudges build up and all of that stuff. It's just, yeah, it's really a shame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems as though Bill Murray was undergoing a divorce.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And was obsessing about the film. This is IMDb. He would ring Harold Ramis constantly, often early hours of the morning. Ramis eventually sent screenwriter Danny Rubin to sit with Murray and iron out all his anxieties. One of the reasons Murray stopped speaking to Ramis for several years.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah, and he would try. One of the things in here is like some set rumor that he would try to direct him. Ramis would, and Murray would interrupt him and just ask him, is it good Phil or bad Phil for the scenes? I mean, you know, it's tough. Tough.
Wow.
And there's, you know, they've created some amazing comedy and movie memories together. So.
Did you see that the Ghostbusters movie that came out?
No, I have not. I have not.
Because there's a scene where they have a CGI Harold Ramis that shows up. Spoilers, by the way. Sorry. Mm. Spoilers for Ghostbusters Afterlife. Yeah, so all that is to say that, like, Harold Ramis shows up at the end, and Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Ernie Hudson are there, and they have, like, this last moment, kind of, to say goodbye to Harold Ramis. And that's, like, there's sort of an added element to, like, Bill Murray's sort of goodbye in that moment, I think. This got me thinking, though, this idea of thinking about the Ramis-Murray feud got me thinking, Betsy.
Oh, no. Yep.
I've got a list of the top five Hollywood feuds right here. I got a list of the top five Hollywood feuds.
Are you going to bring up our feud, Greg, and really dredge up all that? I mean, I thought we put it behind us.
Do we have a feud? No, I don't think we've ever.
You don't remember our feud, Greg? You can't even remember it. You're discounting it by throwing shade. Oh my God, Greg. That's it. I'm not talking to you for the rest of this podcast. I'm out.
Let's play the feud.
Harmony out. All right, fine. All right. What's the honorable mention?
I don't have an honorable mention.
I can't even believe this. You didn't choose, like, what is it, American Horror Story feud or whatever?
I don't have an honorable mention. Honestly, the five that I picked are from all over the board. They're not just actors. It's just whoever. It's just random.
It's madness.
Yeah, okay. It's like random.
All right, let's go to number five.
Okay, so number five, the feud between Sarah Jessica Parker and Kim Cattrall.
Pretty good. That's a pretty good one.
And to put a capper on that, did you know that Cattrall, she filmed a cameo for show and just like that. Did. But she had no contact with the rest of the cast when she
filmed. She did not. Smith is just gone. She lives somewhere else now. Sorry. Okay, great. All right, number four.
Number four. Did you know that Gwyneth Paltrow and Martha Stewart have a feud? Martha Stewart published a story about pies, and she titled the story "Conscious Uncoupling."
No.
And so Paltrow posted a recipe on her Instagram of something that she called jailbird cake in response to Martha Stewart.
How do you get a pie story with that headline?
I don't know. Conscious uncoupling. That. Maybe she was talking about like how to slice the pie. I have no idea.
That doesn't make any sense. Okay. All right. Number three.
Number three, Mariah Carey and Jennifer Lopez have a feud. To be fair, I think this is more Mariah Carey's feud than it is Jennifer Lopez's feud.
Mm-hmm.
But Mariah Carey was quoted in an interview when asked about Jennifer Lopez. Mariah just had a four-word response. I don't know her. Savage. Love it.
Wow. Okay. All right. Was that two?
That was three.
What's number two?
Number two, this is a famous one. Deborah Winger and Shirley MacLaine on the set of Terms of Endearment.
Yeah.
Absolutely hated each other. There's a report that came out from the set of Terms of Endearment that MacLaine says that Winger farted in her face on the set one day. Gross.
Wow.
That's just real hate right there.
She might have deserved it. Shirley MacLaine's a real firecracker.
She can be sometimes.
Okay. All right. Number one.
The number one Hollywood feud. I just had to put it on here. It's I'm gonna let you finish. Taylor Swift and Kanye.
Yo, Taylor. I'm really happy for you. I'm gonna let you finish. But Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time. One of the best videos of all time.
Greg, just let it die. Just let it die, Greg.
I will let you finish. So top five Hollywood.
Yeah.
There have been a lot. There's a lot more than that, trust me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. That many egos in one place, for sure.
Right. What's the best scene of Groundhog Day?
The best scene is the diner scene.
Which one?
I am a god.
Yes, it is. Ding, ding, ding. That's what I
ding, ding, ding. That is the best scene. What was that again?
I'm a god.
You're a god.
I'm a god. I'm not the god. I don't think.
Because you survived a car wreck? You folks ready to order?
I didn't just survive a wreck. I wasn't just blown up yesterday. I have been stabbed, shot, poisoned, frozen, hung, electrocuted, and burned.
Oh, really?
And every morning I wake up without a scratch on me, not a dent in the fender. I am an immortal.
Special today is blueberry waffles.
Why are you telling me this?
Because I want you to believe in me.
You're not a god. You can take my word for it. This is 12 years of Catholic school talking.
I could come back if you're not ready.
How do you know I'm not a god?
Oh, please.
How do you know?
Because it's not possible.
I'll come back.
Doris. This is Doris. Her brother-in-law, Carl, owns this diner. She's worked here since she was 17. More than anything else in her life, she wants to see Paris before she dies.
Oh, boy, what
are you doing?
This is Debbie Kleiser and her fiancé, Fred.
Do I know you?
They're supposed to be getting married this afternoon, but Debbie is having second thoughts.
What?
Lovely ring.
This is Bill. He's been a waiter for 3 years since he left Penn State and had to get work. He likes the town, he paints toy soldiers, and he's gay.
I am.
This is Gus. He hates his life here. He wishes he stayed in the Navy.
Well, I could have retired on half pay after 20 years.
Excuse me? Is this some kind of trick?
Well, maybe the real God uses tricks. You know, maybe he's not omnipotent. He's just been around so long, he knows everything.
Oh, okay. Well, who's that?
This is Tom. He worked in the coal mine until they closed the town.
And her?
It's Alice. Came over here from Ireland when she was a baby. She lived in Erie most of her life.
He's right. And her?
Nancy. She works in the dress shop and makes noises like a chipmunk when she gets real excited.
Hey!
It's true.
How do you know these people?
I told you, I know everything. In about 5 seconds, a waiter's gonna drop a tray of dishes. Five, four,
that's
three,
nuts.
Two, one. Okay.
When he goes around, he knows everybody's name and who everybody is, and it is just awesome. Like that. How are you doing this? How do you know what's happening? And, you know, this is Debbie, and she has cold feet, and, you know, this, that, and, you know, she's dreamed of going back to school, like, you know, whatever it is. You know, it's just,
yeah.
I'm not the god, I'm a god.
That's, like, it's that's just, subtly it's, the best line, is I'm not the god, I don't think.
I don't think. Just the writing is so good. And it's just, and because you think, also because you think, that's the big reveal, right?
I get such
a great payoff, and there's still so much of the movie left to go because you've already gotten at that point what you thought was going to be the romancing part,
right?
But then that guy messed up,
and he's been killing himself at this point. This comes on the other side of like all the suicide,
right? And he's just sitting there gorging himself, you know, at the restaurant. Eating all that. She's, and I love Andy McDowell because she is not distant. She's, you know, just looking at him like, don't you worry about cholesterol. Like, she's just watching him eat all this stuff. And then he just starts leading her around and then, you know, writes on a napkin what Chris Elliott's going to say. You know, better get out of the weather. Because you're getting all these payoffs every time so that when you finally get to the end and the enlightenment, it's like payoff after payoff.
Yeah. And I mean, the good thing too is that, like, the way that it falls in the middle of the movie, like, we don't know, like, how he breaks this cycle. Like, you know, like, what is the movie is kind of the question for the audience, right? Like,
right,
he's, you know, he's died, he's gone to sleep or at least gone to other locations, but still wakes back up in bed, you know, like all of these things, you know, these sort of supernatural things. And it's like, okay, so what is the payoff to this movie? Like,
yeah,
how does it end?
Yeah, how are we getting out of here?
Yeah. And so this comment of like, well, I mean, look, the only reasonable explanation is that I'm a god. I just love that. That's just so hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, do you think that when he does wake up the next day and it actually is the next day, that he regrets buying all of that insurance from Ned Ryerson? He's like, oh, crud.
Oh, man. Stephen Tobolowsky. I mean, just has gone on from this. This might have been my first recognition of Stephen as an actor.
Oh, okay.
I feel like
yeah, he's been in a couple of our going on 30s so far, right? So he's
just like
Sneakers, and then
Sneakers,
and I think he was one of the guys in Mississippi Burning, right? One of the bad guys.
He's just such a good, but he's such this kind of character.
Yeah.
Who just pops up out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Ned Ryerson getting it done. The little simple thing about that puddle of ice water.
It's a
Yeah.
What's your best performance of the movie?
Mawkish Griselda. No, I'm just kidding. Mawkish. Murray's easy.
Yeah.
I do think Annie McDowell.
She's really good. She's really good in this.
Because she's got to go up against him.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, and there's, because he is very charming.
Mm-hmm.
And he's supposed to be charming or just repulsive or, you know, he's all over the map, right? And so then she has to kind of either be repelled by him, drawn to him, creeped out by him. You know, even just the simple, like, them throwing the cards in the hat, sitting on the bed. Yeah, there's a real charming quality to the two of them together.
Yeah, she has a line, you know, when he wakes up the next day and he's like, what are you doing here? And she's like, I bought you.
Yes.
And, like, that's a really cheesy line, but she does it, like, really well, you know?
Yeah. Maybe my best actor is that chemistry that they do in this film.
Yeah, I like that.
So they make together.
I am gonna pick Chris Elliott.
Are you?
I am, because this is a very different Chris Elliott. Chris Elliott is a goofball. Like, Chris Elliott is, you know, just kind of like off the chart. Like, he can get like Jim Carrey level, you know, like absurdist comedy. So here's the thing. So I was introduced to Chris Elliott at a very young age, and I don't know why I would have seen this clip, but he was, you know, he would show up on Letterman back in the day. I think he did the Velcro suit, right? It was either he did the Velcro suit or, like, I think he was somehow involved with that, where, like, you know, they had like the suit made of Velcro and they would throw themselves against the wall, like
stick
to it.
Yes.
But the one that I definitely remember of Chris Elliott was they were doing a dog food taste test on David Letterman. And they had like all these dogs and stuff. And then they had like all these cans of dog food. And Dave was like, all right, Chris, so should we start the taste test? And Chris is like, yeah. And he goes to the first can and he takes like a big spoon and he like eats the first can of dog, just like eats straight out of the dog food can. He's like, I don't know about this. It's like, it just, like, for whatever reason, that was like a foundational memory for me of comedy. And you know, it's just sometimes when you're young enough and you see something absurd enough, Like, it just sticks mm-hmm. with you. And so mm-hmm. Chris Elliott, David Letterman show, eating dog food. And from that point forward, I just always thought of Chris Elliott as, like, just this insanely funny guy, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when he showed up in this movie, I was like, oh, my gosh, it's Chris Elliott. But it's, like, a very understated Chris Elliott. Like, he's playing it very, very low key, as opposed mm-hmm. to, like, what he'll eventually do in Cabin Boy and... what the scary movie franchise and stuff like that. So, all right, I got some stats about the movie.
Ooh, stats.
Groundhog Day opened on February 12th, 1993.
Okay.
So,
what day is Groundhog Day?
It's February 2nd, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so like 10 days later.
Interesting.
I wonder why they didn't release it the week before. I don't know. Yeah.
It's probably not an actual day of the week that movies come out.
Right.
It would be my guess. Right?
Yeah, but 10 days later as opposed to like the week of. I don't know. Anyway.
Right. Good point.
So February 12th, 1993, this day in
90210. Did you see that we lost the actor who played Andrea's husband?
No.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Jesse or whatever his name was.
Dude, that guy was young.
He was like 58.
He's not like Joey Tata or.
Well, we've also lost Luke Perry. So
that's true.
That's true. All right. So what happened?
We have arrived at season 3, episode 21. Oh, maybe appropriately, titled Dead End.
Mm-mm.
The description says, after obtaining control of the trust fund money,
uh-oh.
Dylan and Jack. Yeah. Wait, Dylan and Jack. Was Jack his dad? Okay, wait a sec. After obtaining control of the trust fund money, Dylan and Jack live a fantasy until disaster strikes and Kelly's mother is forced to sell her house. All right.
Because of drugs.
Oh, well, I think it was divorce. Like, I think she was getting divorced from David's dad around this time, right? Because he like cheated on her or something.
Mm.
Who is Jack? I think Jack is his dad. After anyway. Okay. So there you go.
Confusing. Okay.
But I do know that Mr. Walsh was in control of the trust fund. That was a big
That was very contentious. Yes. That was a real point of contention, as I just said. Yes.
That's right.
That didn't go well for anybody.
Mr. Walsh was like, you're just gonna blow through all this money, Dylan.
You're gonna
Your mom trusted me with this money.
That's right. That's why it's called the trust fund.
And Groundhog Day had a domestic gross of $71 million, making it the number 14 grossing movie of 1993.
Not bad.
I mean, that's not bad. I would have expected it to make $100 million, but I guess not. You know, I don't know.
For a comedy released in February.
Yeah, it is Dumpuary. Yeah, so.
It is.
It's the number 1,226th top grossing movie of all time between The Spiderwick Chronicles.
Oh, Lord. All right, let me look this up.
I'm pretty sure Spiderwick Chronicles is like a kid's fantasy movie.
I'm pretty sure it is too. Okay. 2008. Oh, Freddie Highmore. And we got David Strathairn.
Okay.
It's in this. Mary Louise Parker.
Oh.
Sarah Bolger. Oh, Nick Nolte. Joan Plowright, Andrew McCarthy.
Welcome to the Spiderwick Chronicles. I'm Nick Nolte.
Seth Rogen, Martin Short. Who's not in this movie? Hold on, let's read it.
Is it animated?
No. Moving into the rundown Spiderwick estate with their mother, twin brothers Jared and Simon Grace, along with their sister Mallory, find themselves pulled into an alternate world full of fairies and other creatures.
It's the Chronicles of Narnia.
Chronicles of Narnia. Yep. That is what it is.
So there you go.
There are some creatures that look like there might be some CGI involved.
Yeah, so that's what Seth Rogen was doing. He was like voicing, he's like voicing some elephant or something that's on the other side.
Yeah.
So you get the Spiderwick Chronicles, you get Groundhog Day, and then the other movie is Paul Blart Mall Cop 2. Mall Cop 2.
You know what this sadly makes me know is that Paul Blart Mall Cop is higher on this list.
That's right.
Groundhog Day.
Oh no, it's one below Groundhog Day.
It's one below?
One below, yeah.
All time grossing?
Yeah. Paul Blart 2 comes in just below Groundhog Day.
No, but I'm saying Paul Blart, the first movie.
Oh, the first Paul Blart.
Higher on the list.
Paul Blart, the first Paul Blart would be higher on the list. Probably. Likely.
Such a tragedy. Since Mary is my highest rank, it goes to Groundhog Day. And since Paul Blart, I will hang his corpse upon his Segway and let it ride away while Seth Rogen and his character named Hog Squeal and I flirt over by the maple tree in the Spiderwick Chronicles.
Oh my god. Yeah, that's the only answer. It's my answer as well.
Yes.
Paul Blart Mall Cop 2. When are we going to talk about that on the show? Everybody's been begging for us to talk about Paul Blart.
Can't shut up about it.
You guys have to hold your horses. Sorry. It's, you know.
We're not there yet.
I don't know
what year that is. You got a long time. So Paul Blart makes your it hats.
We'll get to Paul Blart. Don't worry. All right. Groundhog Day has a 94% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, Roger. It does.
Roger Ebert. What do you think?
I think he liked it. These are Chicago guys. These are Chicago guys.
He kept it short on this one. Here he goes.
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
The film is lovable and sweet. 3 out of 4 stars.
Okay.
Thanks for coming, Raj. He must have been in a hurry. He was
like, dim praise. Okay.
I gotta go. It was good. 3 stars.
I got stuff to do.
What do you want from me? It was a good movie.
I gotta go.
Janet Maslin, she had a couple more words in her review. She says, Mr. Murray is back in top form with a clever and varied role that draws upon the full range of his talents.
Oh, a lot more from Janet.
Yeah, a lot of Bill Murray praise from Janet.
Interesting. Okay.
How did it do at the Oscars? Betsy, you're going to be shocked to learn that this had no wins or nominations at the 1994 Oscars.
Even with that truck going into a quarry, flipping upside down and exploding.
Trust me.
No sound or film editing here?
Unbelievable.
No animal wrangling category?
Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, Oscar nominee. Groundhog Day? No. Not at all.
Not even screenplay? Okay, fine. The Academy, they have a hard time with comedy, Greg.
There you go. They do have a hard time with comedy.
Especially in the year 2024. Yes. Well, especially back when they only nominated 5 movies.
That's right. So. But. Did have a BAFTA win. This won a BAFTA. Groundhog Day won a BAFTA. What BAFTA do you think Groundhog Day won?
I'm not as familiar with the BAFTA categories. Is it a technical category?
No, it is not. This is a category that would show up in the Oscars.
Screenplay.
Yes, it won Best Original Screenplay.
Yay!
I thought that was neat. You know, hey, look, the Brits know quality.
The Brits get it.
They get it.
Morning. Off to see the groundhog?
Yeah.
Think it'll be an early spring.
Didn't we do this yesterday?
I don't know what you mean.
Don't mess with me, Porkchop. What day is this?
It's February 2nd. Groundhog Day.
Yeah. Sorry. You know, I thought it was yesterday.
Oh.
What's the lasting legacy of this movie? You know, I don't know that there's like a big societal like legacy of this movie, but this movie does start a trope of like the trapped in the day movie, which we see. So I have a list of trapped in the day movies. Edge of Tomorrow, which is the sci-fi version of this. That's the cruise. That's the Tom Cruise, Emily Blunt movie.
Right? Yes. Okay.
Happy Death Day is the horror movie version of this trope. Palm Springs. That was like a COVID.
Yes.
Andy, what's
Sandberg? Yeah.
Run, Lola, Run. Do you remember that movie? The German movie?
Yes. Late 90s, early 2000s, at aughts?
Yeah, I would say like early 2000s. I think it was when I was still working at the books, the video store. And then more recently on Netflix, Russian Doll plays into this
trailer. Yes. Yeah, such a great series.
But this is interesting, right? Because this is a movie that starts that. And so now every time you see one of these movies, you say, oh, it's Groundhog Day. Just
right. Groundhog Day becomes beyond what Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
The day.
Yeah. So it like creates its own trope. I just think that that's interesting. Mm-hmm. It makes me wonder, like, when you're writing a Groundhog Day script, like for us, it's clear, like, you know, Harold Ramis is working on really like a spiritual question, right? Of how do you release yourself from this? But for everything else, like what's the purpose of this trope? Like when you use this as a storytelling device, what are you trying to say? What are you trying to reveal with your story?
Well, I mean, I think it tends to be that this is some sort of lesson that a character has to learn. There's something that has to be chewed on or discovered, you know, whether it's some sort of character development, or you think about, you know, if you think about like a Russian Doll, that there's something that needs to be solved, so that you need to kind of experience the day. Like there's information that's needing to be gathered. So that there's new experiences. It's because it almost goes to, it's almost like lucid dreaming is kind of what you're experiencing. You're suddenly able, you're recognizing the dream while you're in it, and you're able to control it and move it and do something different with it once you realize you're trapped. So then what do you do?
Yeah.
So it's either about a character development, or it's about a plot. Something's got to be figured out. So we're either working on a character or we're working on the plot. It's about digging deeper somehow. But the clock is running in a weird way, right? So you have a clock that's running every day. Every time you wake up, you only have a limited amount of time to do something. And you're either in a scenario where you're showing every day, and that's really, you have these limits saying, oh no, I can't go to sleep, no, I just gotta keep going, you know, and then you're out, and then you gotta either start over, or you now have gained something and you have to move the next step or whatever, or you skip days like you would in what we're looking at here.
You know, in all of these stories, and I'm just looking at this list and I'm thinking about Groundhog Day too, at some point it becomes a curse. Right. Like it starts off as sort of a curiosity, and then it can quickly sort of become like a curse, like, you know, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. Like this is like a living hell kind of thing. Right. The thing that Russian Doll did that I thought was really clever, they made her a video game designer. Right. And if you've ever played video games, like it's virtually impossible to play a video game without dying at some point, mm-hmm. right? Whatever the game over equivalent is, right? And so you have to start again, knowing what you know about the level, and try to make it to the next, you know, area.
Right.
Like, but you have this sort of previous knowledge, you know, as you're guiding mm-hmm. the character through whatever it was that snagged you the first time. So video games sort of instill this idea in us too, of like, keep going, even when you have a setback, like keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I love about Edge of Tomorrow is that, you know, there are moments in that where Cruz gets almost to the end and then he dies and gets reset back, you know, to the beginning again. Right. And it's like, that's like one of those moments where you're facing like the final boss in a Super Mario Brothers game. You're like, you're facing Bowser and you get killed and you have to go all the way back to the beginning of the dungeon. You're just like, nah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a great trope when it's done well.
Who is this movie for, Betsy?
I mean, Emily's comment about the adulting kind of threw me a little when I think about when this came out and thinking about adults at the time watching. I was not an adult at the time watching, right. but I thought it was just funny. I mean, I got technically I was an adult, but you know, I wasn't looking at it that way. I thought it was just a funny movie.
Yeah.
But I was not yet old enough to understand the feeling of the trappedness of life and the routine of life.
Right.
There's a great video of David Foster Wallace's graduation speech at Kenyon.
Oh.
Called This Is Water. And he kind of talks about to the graduates that they don't yet kind of know some of those aspects of postgraduate adult life, the day in, the day out of life.
Right.
You know, and he bases it off of that goldfish kind of thing. You know, one goldfish swim past the other and says, "Hey, boys, how's the water?" And the other one turns to the other and says, "Hey, what's water?" You know, because you're just swimming in it. Right. You don't see your own life. You're not present to your own life.
Right.
And so there's something about this that is about that.
Yeah.
This movie is about this. You're in the water and you're not even present to your own life.
Yeah.
And so in the animation, you know, it's David Foster Wallace speaking and it's, you know, you don't know, you know, driving, you know, on SUV laden roads to just go to the grocery store after work and just to get some food and everybody else is there and everybody else is frustrated and you're living your life very me centered.
Yeah.
You know, all these people are in my way as I'm trying to get through my day, to get back to my house, at my dinner. I think at the age when I encountered this movie, I was just going to college. I hadn't thought about any of that yet. Right. So it's, I think about that a little more now. And yeah. I wonder whether people at the time really were able to step into that. I know Buddhists and stuff were really excited about this movie. They reached out to Harold Ramis. Yeah, it was not something that wasn't not talked about, the deeper elements of this movie.
I mean, yeah, but it's also like it's not sort of self-evident about the movie. I mean, you can watch the movie and be like, "Oh, that was good," and have no idea that it has something to say about religion or the spirit or anything like that.
But I'm also trying to think about watching this movie at the time and now. I have had, you know, people I've known die by suicide and things like that, you know, like because of the feeling of despair or trappedness in their own lives, that I'm trying to imagine watching this for the first time.
Yeah.
Would you have a trigger warning on this?
I mean, it sounds like,
you're saying this movie for anyone.
Yeah.
I am. I mean, but it's also, I mean, was it really, hey, it's a comedy.
Right.
Is it more the Simpsons of it all? Right.
Yeah.
Is it that at its surface, you can be like, you know, this is funny,
right?
Funny comedy, right? But then there's more of a commentary that's actually going on if you would like to engage with that as well.
Layers like onions, if you want to keep going. Yeah, totally.
Thank you, Shrek.
You're welcome. Everybody likes a parfait. You should say it's like a parfait.
It's like a parfait. It's a trifle.
I said the movie's for, I don't know. It seems like it's for anyone. It's for... Mm-hmm. Like, if you're, yeah, it's exactly what you said. If you're looking for depth, it's there. If you're just looking to have a good time with the movies, it's there. You know, it's just, it's whatever you want the movie to be, really. So, what is your rating for this movie out of 5?
A 4.5.
Above or below Dazed and Confused?
Above.
This is your number one movie right now.
This is my number one movie right now.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. What do you
I give it a 4. So
okay,
harsher grader with it. But
okay.
But I do think that it's a good movie. And the other thing that I would say about this movie, it holds up 30 years down the road. Like, I'm, you know, I'm looking at the fashion. Mm-hmm. Everybody's fine. Everybody's fine in this movie. I'm looking at, you know, the sort of dated elements of it. They're not really there. A couple of hair things, you know, it's a couple of people's hair that looks a little weird. But why did we nominate this movie? This was a joint pick for the two of us to nominate. This was our second. Yeah, this and Dazed and Confused were our joint picks. Mm-hmm. So we've gotten through our joint picks very quickly.
I know. All top of the alphabet.
That's right.
I mean, it was another staple of this time.
Yeah.
And going forward, because
yeah,
of,
I would say that it's Cable. The legacy of the movie. Yeah, for me, yeah, it's the fact.
Isn't it
that,
weird,
like,
that Cable's like not a thing? Like, this is like, this is like an era. Like, this is because of Cable TV. Yeah.
Well, okay, we've talked about what Emily said about the movie.
Oh, I have her Fugitive.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, we got to go back and do a sweep up because I didn't get her Fugitive reviews. Okay. So she agrees that it has all of the ingredients of just a really amazing movie. Like, it's just a great movie. All around, great movie.
This is the future.
Little kids watching this movie, we're not really caring about the language. No one seems to really be caring. Mm-hmm. He's watching this movie as a child. No one's caring. Mm-hmm. And she said Tommy Lee Jones is just like, he's just the train chugging through this movie. He's keeping time. He's just the rhythm of the movie. She thought Celia Ward was great.
Wow.
She was a big fan of the movies, of the show Sisters. She remembers that she thought those girls were so cool.
Uh-huh.
I told her your top 10 or your top 5 was.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Sisters movies. She remembers thinking they were very cool.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah. So she remembered Celia Ward.
Wow.
It's been very cool. Did not mention Julia Moore. There you go.
Okay.
And, you know, Harrison Ford, admirable, but for her, it's really Tommy Lee Jones and Steve.
Yeah, I would say that's right.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. That's a lot from Emily.
Strong
usually
review.
It's like one sentence. This is she went all in on the Fugitive. Wow.
Like the Fugitive. Yeah.
Lots to chew on there.
Yeah.
What do you think Whoopi Goldberg said about Groundhog Day in her Oscars monologue?
Nothing. Unfortunately, nothing.
That's right. And so that is it. Groundhog Day in the books. Out of sight. Next up. All right. Now we're going to start getting into some Academy movies here.
Yeah, we are.
We're going back to Daniel Day-Lewis. We haven't seen Daniel Day-Lewis in a while, so we get to check back in.
DDL.
We're going back to Ireland. We haven't done an Irish movie in a while. So we're going back to Ireland. Our next movie is In the Name of the Father. Betsy, are you going to start singing the U2 now?
Oh, I can already hear. actually, right now I'm just hearing the beautiful Sinead O'Connor song. That's actually
soundtrack. Did she do a song really too? Good. I thought it was all.
She's on there.
Oh, okay.
She sings on there a little bit, and then they're also just this. I will say, listeners, get the In the Name of the Father soundtrack going on your Spotify.
Yeah.
It's actually a great collection of some really good 70s hits and some other stuff. And then, some U2 stuff for the 90s.
And a lot of Irish.
It's some nice stuff. It's a nice mood setter. I think I discovered some 70s rock from this soundtrack. So great show.
In the Name of the Father.
Okay, that is, can't listeners, wait. That is not on the soundtrack.
That'll be our next movie. Betsy, thank you for hanging out in Punxsutawney with me.
Thank you for tolerating my wearing of this top hat.
Do you mind if we run a few errands while we're here? Just a few things to do, you know.
Just a few things to do around town.
Yeah. Catch kids. Okay.
I'll tag along.
Throw a party. Take some piano lessons. You know.
Just, you know, get some knives for teeth. Here we go.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
I got you, babe. I got you.